What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Eyewitness History. I am your host, Josh Cohen. This episode, I speak with Wally Ferriston. Wally is a cue card handler and supervisor known for his work on Saturday Night Live. He also does cue cards for Late Night with Seth Meyers and his private business, Cue Cards by Wally. His first appearance on camera was in 1991 during a monologue featuring Steve Martin. Ferriston had his first spoken lines on the show in 1993 during an Alec Baldwin monologue. Since 2014, Ferriston has been a cue card handler for Late Night with Seth Meyers. His increasing frequency of spoken lines and his popularity with the audience has caused guest John Oliver to joke that Ferriston is staging a slow-motion coup. In 2020, Ferriston began Cue Cards by Wally, a private business wherein he creates personalized cue cards, mostly for SNL fans. He started the business while SNL was doing remote recorded episodes, and thus his cue cards were not needed. We discussed a lot in this episode. He has a bunch of stories from his time at SNL, which he goes into. We discussed his business, Cue Cards by Wally, was generous enough to actually make me a cue card, which he shows on the show, and will be made available via YouTube video, which I'll include in the show notes. And now, without further ado, I will give you Wally Ferriston. Okay, I'm here with Wally Ferriston. Wally, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation for the last couple of weeks.
Well, let me just say, I was a history minor in college, but I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be interviewed on a history podcast. So, this is kind of a cool thing, full circle. Love history, really into it, and now I'm being interviewed on the history podcast. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's great, Wally. Well, hey, the pleasure is mutual. I assure you. Well, yeah, and actually, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is I want to discuss, obviously, your career. The phrase I've been using is your brushes with history. But we'll get there. Before we do, please tell our listeners briefly who you are and what you do.
My name is Wally Ferriston. I am the head cue card guy at Saturday Night Live. I actually own two cue card companies, New York City Cue Cards and Cue Cards by Wally. But I've been doing cue cards for Saturday Night Live and other shows for 32 years, since 1990.
That's incredible. I love it, man. Yeah. So how did you get your start in the television industry and what led you to become the head of the cue card department?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long story. I wanted to be a writer. I went to Syracuse University and majored in writing for TV and film. And my goal was to just write. So I moved to California. Nothing happened out there. Moved to New York City. And my brother at the time was working at SNL as a receptionist, and was actually just going to start writing for the Letterman show. And he heard there was an opening in the cue card department. So he called me up and told me that. And I was like, that's great. Did you recommend me? And he was like, no, I know your handwriting's terrible. Why would I recommend you for cue card writing? I was like, you don't do cue cards. Let them tell me my handwriting is terrible and not hire me. And he's like, oh, all right, fine. So he got me the interview. I went in there, printed, and basically the interview is you print some cue cards up. And it was pretty bad writing, but they said they'd seen worse, which I think they were being nice to me because of my brother. And they hired me. And I almost was fired because my handwriting was really bad, but I was really good at holding, and that kind of saved my job. And that's how I got into cue cards, just to get my foot in the door to write, and kind of stayed there, you know, for the rest of my life.
That's interesting. And you know, just I suspect our listeners will want to know, who is your brother, Wally?
My brother is Fight Ferriston. He wrote for the Letterman Show for 5 years, and then wrote for Seinfeld for 3 years, wrote the Soup Nazi episode of Seinfeld for his first episode. And now he has a car podcast, and he had a late night talk show. He's a writer and personality. You probably know, some people probably know of his work mostly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Without question. So, you know, this might be an odd question here, but what's your role as the department head of the cue card department? You know, how do you work with the cast and crew to ensure that everything runs smoothly?
Yeah. My job is to work with the host one-on-one each week. So that's kind of the cool part of my job. Whoever comes in, like we have Woody Harrelson coming in today or tomorrow. And I'll go in there and Woody's been there before. This is his fifth time hosting. So This is, it's really an easy week for me because he knows cue cards. He can't see very well, so we have to print his letters big. So it's a little harder for me, but my job is to work with the host. If I don't know, if they've never worked with cue cards before, get them comfortable with cards, them feel safe that the card, that all the words are going to be on there. And then, the cast is familiar with cards, but, a cast member, like a new cast member might have a lot of lines. It might be like their featured sketch and they're not used to that. So I'll work with them a little bit extra. I'll say, hey, come back and run lines if you want. I'm just there to make them feel comfortable and safe that all the words are going to be on the cards. They're going to be in the right places where they can see them all right. And that they don't have to worry about cue cards and they can worry about their performances. That's kind of where my main focus is, and everything else is, another thing.
Sure. It's always interesting and exciting when everything goes right. But you know what? It's also pretty exciting when things go awry, let's say. Is there a particular time you can think of where things just blew up and you just thought, what is going to happen on Sunday?
Yeah, well, that's the live aspect of that show. And I think that's why it's why we're still on the air. And I think that's why people still watch. Great to see things work well. But when something screws up, oh, man. Yeah, no, there was a time about, I don't remember how long ago, because I'm trying to erase it from my memory that we got changes last minute before the air show. And I was making them with somebody else and I made a mistake, but they send down a full script and we go through the script real quick and we look at the changes. They didn't do that this time. They sent like just the pages that had changes on it. So they sent me pages, say, 10, 11, 12, and then 14, 15. So there's no change on 13, but I was so frazzled. And so we were doing them so quick and it was getting close to airtime that I cut everything on page 13, even though that wasn't supposed to be cut. So I cut a full page of dialogue. And it turns out it was the cold open. And I cut out a character that was supposed to say live from New York. Like, you're not in this sketch anymore. You got cut. And he was like, what? I didn't know that. And I was like, well, you're not in here. So he was not there anymore. Somebody else said live from New York. It was a disaster. Needless to say, Lorne was very upset with us. And it was my mistake and I made it. And yeah, he wanted to fire our whole department. But that was the initial thing. Well, realized he couldn't do that. Listen, mistakes happen. It just, from Lauren's perspective, I think he wants the cold open and the monologue to run smoothly. And then if a mistake happens in the rest of the show, it's fine because, that's kind of thing. Just when you see a mistake up at the top of the show, then it kind of throws the rhythm off of everything. So yeah, it was my mistake. It was really bad. And, we just made sure we didn't make any mistakes again for the next 10 years, So we do pretty good. It's one mistake every 10 years or so.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad. We really try. We have, I tell my guys, if you're going to make a mistake, if you're going to be slow or fast on a pull, do it on dress rehearsal. And then you can, you get really focused on the air show, I think, everybody. And then, you tend not to have as many mistakes.
Right. And the Lorne in this case is, of course, the great Lorne Michaels, legend. The God King.
We're on good footing now with Lorne and I. So things are good. Knock on wood there.
What's it like working with him on a daily basis?
Oh, it's pretty amazing to watch. It really, really is. He's there all the time and the little things he puts in the show, and he really lets the writers who produce their sketches have autonomy. He gives them suggestions of things to do, but it's really him giving just these little notes. I remember this one time, the first thing that really struck me was, I think it was Glenn Close. I don't remember a lot of specifics. This was really stuck with me. Glenn Close was hosting and it was her monologue and she had on people from her Connecticut town. She lived in a small Connecticut town and she brought people on for her monologue, like the fire chief and the police chief and people just that she has daily, connections with from this small town in Connecticut. And they joined her on stage and it was the Christmas show. And I don't know if they sang a Christmas song, but they did something Christmas related and they were all surrounding her and stuff. And it wasn't working the way he wanted it to work. We did it for dress and it just wasn't getting the response that he wanted. And I remember during the meeting, he said, let's add snow to the monologue. Let's make it snow. They put the fake snow on. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting choice. And he added this fake snow and it just changed the whole vision of the monologue. And the audience loved it and it killed. And it was just such a nice, really cool thing. And it was a simple little addition that no one else thought of. And, but yet he did. And the vision of that is just like, see, and you see that stuff happen all the time. But that one really stuck with me, like going, oh, wow, he really knows what he's doing. You know, he really does. Yeah. It was really neat.
That's extraordinary. You know, one question, Wally, I'm kind of burning to ask. This isn't on my question list here, but I was listening to Bob Odenkirk on Howard Stern. And he mentioned working the night of the infamous Steven Seagal hosting. And there's that, I don't know what you would call it, surreal sketch toward the end where he brings in his own stunt people and they do this whole, you know, corporate boardroom thing. And I'm curious, were you involved in that at all? Or did you do the cards for it?
I was doing the cards for that show. I don't remember that sketch specifically, but what I do remember about Steven Seagal was like all he wanted to do was kick and punch people in sketches. That's it. That's all I remember. Like everywhere a sketch we rehearsed, if it didn't have him punching or kicking somebody, he wasn't the least bit interested in it. And they would try to explain to him, you can't beat up everybody in every sketch. They're gonna be different. And he just didn't understand. He was not happy. He just wanted to beat everybody up in every single sketch. And they're like, this is not an action movie. And they were trying to explain it to him, and they just weren't getting through. It was hard. I remember it was hard for him to get him out of this dressing room at times to come rehearse because there wasn't any of that stuff. Like he wouldn't leave his dressing room. Like, we need to rehearse the shows in, you know, tomorrow, and he wouldn't come out. So it was a very difficult weekend. I loved it. I loved his movies. I was really looking forward to working with him. But again, you see some actors come in that you love, and then you get it. Then you see the different perspectives of there, and it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe he's not so cool as I thought he was.
Sort of a don't meet your heroes.
Yeah, that one was for sure. Yeah.
So, you know, not to make you recreate your that SNL video you did on creating the cue cards, but I am curious if you could walk our listeners through a typical day on set and what responsibilities you have during that time.
Yeah, again, it's just, you know, it's me. We have one set of cue cards for the rehearsals on Thursday and Friday because the sketches change so much that we don't want to, you know, if a sketch, so most sketches are three sets of cards, you know, there'll be a center set of cards, and then a set of cards on each side. But they change so much between Thursday and Friday that we really don't start duping until Friday afternoon. No, we call duping the cards. Making like sets. You know, three like sets of the original set. So I'll be on. I'll go on set. I haven't seen it because I don't print the cards anymore for SNL. I have guys that do that for me. I'll come in and just do the rehearsal stuff. So I haven't seen this sketch at all. So I'll go out and we'll block it first on camera with the director. Off camera, the director, the cast. And while I'm doing that, I'm surveying the set and figuring out where the sets of cards are going to be. How many do I need? If it's something where it's a newscaster talking directly to camera, I can do that with one set of cards. And if it's just him, then that's great, one set of cards. If it's a family scene where we're sitting on a couch and we're talking to people, I need a set of cards to my left, I need a set of cards to my right. And then the director's always, and Lauren likes them to play out like it's theater because there is an audience there. So there'll be a set of cards in the middle. So that's it. Basically me figuring that out. And then again, working with the host and letting them know, okay, this is where your cards are going to be. When you're talking to someone over here, you should use those cards. When you're talking to someone over there, use those cards. And just kind of going through the process, you know, explaining it to them. And hopefully they're not freaked out about it. Sometimes they get a little freaked out and in their heads about cue cards. And that's all they think about. Because they don't want to look bad reading cue cards. But sometimes that gets in their head and they don't think about, you need to act, you know, don't worry. Just act and the cards, it'll be in. So basically that's my job. Figuring out how many sets of cards we need, talking to the host, talking to the cast, letting them know where their cards are going to be, and just making sure everybody's comfortable when I've decided. And I'll talk to the director also and run that by them and say, hey, this is where I'm going to put cards. And like, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, excellent. No, thanks, Wally. There's a few hosts that went, and it's so easy to sit and judge, right? People must remember it is live, but you'll see hosts look very clearly at the card and it almost becomes a bit of a joke. Then you see people like, I think of like Adam Driver when he hosted, phenomenal job of just staying on point and not reading the cards. So that's a skill that fascinates me.
Yeah, it's really, everybody's different. Everybody has a different thing. Adam Driver, man, we over rehearse. We rehearse so much with the cards. He's really fanatical about it, but I love him because he really comes off looking really great. So I'll basically be in his dressing room all day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with the cards. And he's underlining things and he's drawing slashes to help him with the breaks and things like that, going through the cards multiple times so that by the time the air show comes along, those cards are exactly how he wants them. And he's really well rehearsed on that. So it's funny that you bring up his name because he really puts a lot of work in working with me in the cards and making sure that his performance is the best he can have, you know, be. So I really like work.
Yeah, and it shows too. He's fast becoming one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, he's great. I really like him too as a person. Great guy.
Yeah. So Wally, there's a couple episodes that I just kind of want to track through and just kind of get your thoughts on. I know from our discussion and from seeing you in other interviews. So the first one I want to bring up is the infamous Sinead O'Connor instance. Now just to catch our listeners up, this is where she ripped a photo of the Pope after saying, I think it was, fight the real enemy. Tons of fallout, as one might imagine. I still can't really imagine what she could have been thinking, but talk about seeing this in real time and the aftermath, please.
Yeah, well, that the crazy thing is, like, first of all, it's like you're wondering, like, if I didn't work for the show, like, how did she pull that off? You know, because why didn't they just cut away from her? Why didn't they go to another camera shot of something else? So
yeah,
she's pretty smart. So she always planned to rip up a picture, but for rehearsal and for dress rehearsal, it was a picture of an orphan. It was not the Pope. And her people said they only want a shot with one camera. I want a static shot. I don't want you cutting away. I don't want any cameras around cutting away. I just want one shot of me. I want to sing directly to this camera. And they thought it was, oh, she wants to, you know, perform. She's making a statement kind of thing. So they said, okay, sure. So there were no other cameras to cut to. She made sure that there were no other cameras that they could cut to.
Wow.
Pretty smart. Yeah. So rehearsal and dress rehearsal, she ripped up a picture of an orphan and she was making a different statement. And then she switched the pictures for the air show and he didn't have anywhere to cut to. It caught everybody by surprise. And yeah, I just remember we have a radio in the back of our department. I wasn't on the floor. I was in our department because usually that's my time to like actually get 5 minutes rest. Yeah. The only time I'm not holding cue cards for it. And she did it. She ripped the picture of the Pope up. And I remember the director, Davey Wilson. He was this old time director, our first director. And I remember him going, like, oh my God, she just ripped up a picture of the Pope. And we all just started laughing. And we're just kind of like, wait, why? Wait, what did she do? Because we weren't really paying attention. So it was pretty wild. And it was just pretty like, it was a little bit of like chaos-y after. And yeah, I mean, I think she came up. I remember she came up for Good Nights and people were kind of like giving her hugs and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think her career ever freaking recovered from that stunt.
No, I mean, I think she was booed right off stage like a month later. I still don't quite know. Actually, the story that you tell me there just sort of confirms that this was, you know, planned and premeditated and strategic. And I don't quite know what the point was.
Well, very smart. She was very smart. Like she was giving them no outlets to go to, you know?
Yeah.
And smart.
Yeah, fair play there.
Smart planning, but not very smart thinking.
Yeah. Right. I'd love to know about the time John McCain hosted SNL. I think this was, his appearance was the weekend before the presidential election, correct?
Oh, he hosted a show a few years before that. Then he came in a guest appearance. So he hosted a show and I'm a Democrat and he was a Republican, but man, I was impressed by this guy. This is back when Republicans and Democrats weren't too far apart. You know what I mean? From each other. And I really respected the guy. I'd read up a little bit about him and he was a super nice guy. And I think he was an older man. So he did a great job reading the cards and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed working with him. And then he came back and he was running for president against Barack Obama. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it was the weekend before the election. So it was the Saturday before the Tuesday presidential election. And he wasn't supposed to be on. And we found out Friday night, John McCain's coming in. He's going to be in a sketch or two. And I was like, great. I'll be glad to see him. And he came in and we went to run cards with the one sketch he was in. I think me, Lauren, and one of the maybe two of the writers. And I was standing in the dressing room with him. And the first thing he said to Lauren, and it really struck me as, wow. He said, I'll do anything you guys want me to do. I'll be in as many sketches as you want. I'll do anything and I'll say anything you want me to say.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, oh, he thinks he's losing the election. He said, he's basically saying, there's no way. I need some kind of bump. I need some kind of publicity to maybe help me out in Tuesday's election. Because if you thought you were going to win the presidential election, would you go to Saturday Night Live and say, I'll do anything you want me to do? No, you would not. You'd be playing it safe. You'd be laying low. You know, you'd be maybe making a couple of speeches here and there, but you'd be laying low. You would not go to Saturday Night Live and say, I'll say and do anything you want me to do. And I was like, oh, he's losing. He thinks he's going to lose this election. And he did. And it was amazing. I was just seeing that kind of insight from inside. Like he was like not confident at all that he was going to win.
Wow.
And he was right.
He was right. It's incredible.
Because usually politicians are very like, everything has to be cleared, you know, and everything has to be like approved. He was like, I'll do anything you want me to do.
Wow. His last stand.
His last stand. Yeah. Well, you got to respect that a little bit too. You know, I was like, oh, he's trying to get something.
You know, I'm curious, Wally, do you ever get starstruck? Have you ever been?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I think the reason that I'm good at my job is that I hide it well if I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because these guys don't want to hear that you're a huge fan. You know, some of them do. Some of them want to hear that. But like if James Garner ever hosted, I was a huge Rockford Files fan. And James Garner never hosted, but he was the one guy that I was like, if he ever hosted, I wouldn't be able to hide, you know, how much I love him and all his stuff he's done. My oldest son's middle name is Garner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I wanted to name him Rockford. I wanted to name him his middle name Rockford. My wife wouldn't let me. So let me tell you, this is a quick side story. So
yeah,
James Garner was going to be a guest on a Rosie O'Donnell show, which also shot right next door in NBC. And I knew the segment producer, and I was like, do you have James Garner? I heard he's going to be on next week. And she's like, yes, I'd love to meet him. I'd love to bring my son in and introduce him. Can you set that up? And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. He's supposed to be a really nice guy. So day comes, I bring my son into work. I think he's probably like three and a half. And she brings me to his dressing room, and she introduces me, tells him who I am. And I was like, yeah, I've been waiting for you to come host Saturday Night Live. And he was like, I'll never do it. And I was like, why? Why won't you ever do it? He's like, I don't like live. I don't like performing live. It scared me. But he was really older at the time as well. So I was just like, well, it's just a pleasure to be you. You know, I've been a huge fan of yours. And I wanted to name my middle son here, Matt Rockford, as his middle name. And he was like, that would be the stupidest thing you'd ever do. I was like, yeah, my wife agreed with you. She would let me. I go, so we settled for Garner. And he laughed. And he was like, you know, that's not my real name. And I'm like, wait, what? He's like, my real name is Baumgartner. And I'm like, going, oh, okay. But he was so nice. He was so nice. He took a picture with me and my son. And man, it was a thrill to meet him. I was just like, he was the one that I was like, just really like gaga over. And like, but I've had my like man crushes over, like, you know, the celebrities coming in and my crushes on the female celebrities coming in and come and go, but never really starstruck, because if I am, I can't do my job effectively.
That makes sense to me. Well, it's funny. You mentioned, you know, man crushes and starstruck and stuff. You mentioned Woody Harrelson earlier. He is probably one of my top five all-time favorite actors. I love him. It seems like he's the nicest guy on the planet, too.
The nicest guy. And he's great. You're so right. He's a great actor. He's so good in everything. And all his roles are so different.
Just kills it in everything he does.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'd love to know what it was like when Donald Trump hosted SNL for the first time. And also, as a corollary, Wally, I understand that he hired you to hold cards for the Apprentice finales, correct?
Yes, this is true. So he was, you know, a lot of people will come in, especially if they're not actors and work on and host Saturday Night Live, and they're terrified. They don't like to admit it, but they're terrified because they're on live TV. They've never worked with cue cards before. They're doing comedy, which they're not really their forte, which was Donald Trump. And a lot of them, you know, some of them will take it out on me because I'm the closest guy that's there, and they can, you know, kind of put their insecurities onto me. So he was really tough and demanding. Like, if he'd be reading a card and if there was one letter that was kind of like off kilter or like too close to another letter, he'd be like, well, I print that whole card over. I can't read that one word. And, you know, that's not what you do. We just tape over that one word and we reprint it. So neater, but whatever. But my job is basically not to argue with the host. It's to do anything they want to make them comfortable. So I'm like, yes, sir, I'll get that done for you. So I would just be doing this all. And this was going on. He was like kind of doing little nitpicky things like that. And all weekend long. We're coming up to me and like, oh, I'm so sorry you're having to deal with that. I go, listen, this is my job. This is what I do. You know, it's not a big deal. So we did the show. He was very thankful after the show. And then I saw him the Monday after he hosted. I was working on Carson Daly and he was coming on as a guest. And I went into his dressing room and I asked him if he wanted any souvenir cards. And he did. So I brought him some cards. And he was like, hey, are you holding cards for me for the Apprentice finale, which is the first Apprentice finale? We were doing it in our studio like 2 or 3 weeks later. And I said, no, I think you're using teleprompter, because he hosted it with Regis. And Regis was a teleprompter. I go, no, you guys are using teleprompter. And he was like, yeah, no, Regis can use teleprompter. I'm going to use cue cards. And I was like, okay. He's like, you're going to get a call tomorrow at noon hiring you to do cards for me. Just tell them what you want to charge them, how many people you need, and we'll get it done.
Wow. All
right. Okay. I get a call at noon on the dot the next day, basically saying the same thing. Donna wants to hire you to do cue cards for the show. What do you want to charge us? How many people you need? You know, whatever you want. And it was that way for like the next 9 years. Anything he did, and he was really nice to me. I liked it. And I say this with all, like, before politics, he was very nice to me. He would get a commercial. He would get hired on a commercial and he'd have like 3 lines and he would make them hire me to be there just in case something came up where he could, we know they added more lines or something like that. And it would always be like, you know, I'd always get the call and like, yeah, we need to hire you to do cue cards. Like, okay, who's the talent? And then there'll be a pause and like, it's Donald Trump. And I was like, oh, and did he tell you I can charge you whatever I want?
Yeah,
he did. But can you go easy on us? We don't have a big budget. He was very, very cool to me. He gave me his front row Mets tickets for my son one time when I wanted to go to a game. Very, very cool to me. And you know, because he thought I was I don't want to toot my own horn. I was the best cue card guy in the country. He would always say that. He was like, well, always the best cue card. He can hold 3 cards with 2 hands, you know, and I could have. And this thing where I can hold the cards for 2 hands. And he always bragged about me being the best in the business. And that's what he is, as we've seen. He only wants to work with the best, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, he was great with me. And I think that first Saturday Night Live was like almost like a test. You know, I passed his test and I was in with the group, you know, and he was just, you know, he would confide in me things, you know, or ask me opinions about things. When we were doing the Apprentice finale, the producers would have to come to me. If they had notes for him, they wouldn't listen to the producers. He would listen to me. And I'm like, I don't know what you want to hear. So the producers got smart. They would tell me what they would want him to say or how they wanted to say it. And then I would lay that message like it was coming from me.
Wow.
It was crazy. Like, you know, I was surprised that he'd ask me to be an advisor, like a cabinet member, because, you know, having no experience in anything, but I'm the best cue card guy, so I must be good at other stuff, you know? Well, he didn't ask me because I would have had to turn him down, but.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
He was a wild guy, I'll tell you that.
That's incredible. I something that's kind of crossed my mind as you were talking, it made me think of it when he mentioned holding 3 cards in one hand. Might be the goofiest question I asked today, but do the cards get heavy, Wally?
Yes, they do. Yeah. Depending on, like, there'll be a lot of heavy sketches this week, because like I said, Woody Harrelson can't see very well. So we'll have to print his letters big, so there'll be more cards, less words on the cards, so more cards. Some of the cold opens we do are 80, 90 cards, and that's really heavy. And those are, you can barely hold them, and you're holding them, you're balancing them with one arm. And then you're holding or you're pulling or you're doubling. So, yeah, they can get really heavy and it gets cumbersome and yeah, it hurts certain body parts after a while of that work, of that stuff. Yeah.
Have your arms ever failed you?
Knock on wood. Have not. There was one time a couple years ago where I was holding, I think it was close to 100 cards for the cold open and I didn't have any breaks. It was one of those Alec Baldwin playing Trump cold opens. And all these, like, I think Robert De Niro was coming in, then Ben Stiller was coming in, all these people were coming in, and I had no way to break the cards up to like take a break and put them up. So I was holding 100 cards with one arm and pulling them as fast as I can because Mr. De Niro, Bobby, as I call him, can't see either. He really can't see. So we're putting like maybe 7 words on a card for him. And I'm like pulling like this, and my arm's getting tired and tired. And then I had to go do a monologue. And the camera was up higher than it normally is. So I was holding the monologue, which wasn't a lot of cards. But because I just held 100 cards in the same arm, my arm was dead. And I almost dropped all the cards. I think it was Matt Damon was the host. And I remember holding my arm up like this, and I couldn't feel it at all, and it was shaking. And it was the closest I came to dropping everything. And I can imagine Matt Damon seeing it coming out. My arm was literally shaking. I was like, going, oh, no. Dead. You know, I couldn't feel it. So I dropped, I pulled to the side of the camera, and I doubled, and I held it lower. And I held it against my body so I could stop it from shaking. I did it that way. And I was never scared in my life. I bet Matt Damon was more scared than I was to be watching that. But that was the closest I came to failing and dropping everything. But oof. I didn't do it.
One of the more famous impressions, you know, certainly of political figures would have to be Tina Fey as Sarah Palin. I'd love to know, what was it like when the two met, and what was it like having Sarah Palin on the show?
Yeah, I mean, well, first, Tina doing that impression, Seth Meyers wrote the first sketch that they were in. I think it was Tina, and then Amy was playing Hillary, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just fantastic. Just blew the walls off the building. And then she did it a couple more times, and then Sarah Palin came in. And yeah, just again, it was standing in the hallway, Lauren, Sarah Palin, and then Tina. And they were just having like kind of a normal talk. And Tina was a little nervous, I think, talking to her. But Sarah was just, she was, you know, kind of just like going along with it. She was very good sport and very, and just like kind of really happy about being there and taking the whole thing. Hmm. The thing I remember most was I went to go to her dressing room to run cards with Sarah Palin by herself, or she had a couple people in there, and she was kind of ordering them around, the lower people around, like almost like in it. She was prettier than I thought she would be. And it reminded me of just like, oh, she's like a head cheerleader ordering the younger cheerleaders around. Where's my coffee? Coffee. And it was just like, that's the impression I got. She's like that pretty head cheerleader that just orders everybody around. So she was nice and everything. And then when she got kind of private, she was kind of like, do this, do that. What are you guys doing?
Interesting.
It was more kind of interesting. It was really kind of interesting. And I was like, yeah, I don't think she'd make a good vice president.
You know, I've had the honor of interviewing many people that were involved in 9/11. I've interviewed firemen, cops, first responders. I even interviewed someone who was in the North Tower after the first plane hit. Yeah, and was evacuated. I'd love to know, please tell me about SNL's first show back after 9/11. And this is where Rudy Giuliani and the NYC firemen appeared on the show.
Yeah, it was pretty wild because we didn't know when we were going to come back, because that happened and, you know, the city shut down and they weren't doing stuff. And, you know, you're not going to do Saturday Night Live, you know, or you're afraid to do Saturday Night Live almost, you know. So again, you know, it's probably Lauren's idea. Let's get the mayor here. Let's get firefighters from Ground Zero and we'll open the show that way. And I wasn't thinking, like, I was running cards. I remember running cards with Mayor Giuliani. He had hosted before, so we had a relationship before. So I was just running cards with him. And then these firefighters show up in uniform, you know, not uniform, but like firefighter uniform. They literally just came from downtown, and they had soot on them, and they had soot on their face, and they didn't want, they were like, we're going to make them up. They were going to put them up on stage just like that. And it was so powerful. It was just so mind-blowingly powerful, you know, like it was really quiet in the studio. And man, again, Lauren being really smart about that. And then, you know, you tell a joke and, you know, Giuliani makes a quip to Lauren, like Lauren's like, is it safe to do the show? Is it okay to be funny again? And Giuliani's like, why start now, Lauren? It was great. It was good. They got a laugh and it was just really powerful. Yeah. It was just an amazing, powerful moment. Yeah. And just, Let us go back and he was like, the city needs it. The world needs it, you know, to laugh.
It was like by him making that quip, he sort of was giving everyone permission to joke again.
Exactly. Exactly. Again, a very smart idea for Lauren to implement, you know, to get things back on track.
One of the many, many reasons why Lauren Michaels is Lauren Michaels.
Yes, sir.
I'd love to know about the time, how's this for a random non sequitur? About the time Betty White hosted the show.
Oh, wow. this is the other spectrum from Donald Trump. You get Donald Trump down here, Betty White up here. So Betty White, was she in her late 80s, 88, 87 hosting, which you know, was, I don't know if it was the oldest person to host, but it's definitely up there. And I've never met her before, and I'd heard how funny she was, but she's old. And so they were like, okay, let's bring back a lot of past female cast members to ease up her work. You know, they brought back Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph and a few others. And the goal was to make her job easier. You know, we'll bring back all these girls, all these women, and they'll split up the hosting job. That was the idea that didn't implement like that. Betty White was still in every sketch, and it was just these girls with Betty White. They didn't make it easier at all. If anything, it made it harder because she had to learn more people's names and work with more people. But man, and Betty couldn't see very well, so we had to print her cards big. But she was the nicest person, and I worked with her, and man, just a thrill. When the show was over, when the live show was over, she wasn't going to go to the party. She was always her manager, and she was like, "No, she's going to be way too tired to go to the party. She's going to go home after the show." But when that show was over, man, I can't speak for everybody else, but I had this feeling that I hadn't had before. Like, now that was a show, and that what an accomplishment that was, that a woman of her age just destroyed on live TV. And I was a part of it. And it was I was so proud just to be part of it. And then I went to the party, and there she is at the party. So 3:30 in the morning, having a hot dog or a hamburger and having a couple of drinks. And oh man, it was such a thrill. And she mentioned me by name on the Tonight Show 3 days later, thanking me for helping over the cue cards. And then she mentioned me in her autobiography that she wrote after that. So it was just a thrill. And I didn't need any of that, but it was just such a nice little footnote to be mentioned in that stuff and being thanked by her, you know, in a public forum like that. It was amazing. It was just so.
Yeah. Not something that happens every day.
No, you don't get mentioned on a Tonight Show.
Is it typical after a show is done to have a party?
Yes. After every show, there's a party, and then there's an after party that we won't talk about those too much, but yeah,
sure.
there's a cast party after every show.
Interesting.
Only time that there wasn't was during the COVID.
Right. I would imagine. Well, no, thank you for taking some time on that, Wally. There's a few more guests I want to talk about, kind of in the, I would say, the strange and topical realm. They've been in the news, and they were on the show as a result. The first person I'd like to talk about actually is Richard Jewell, what it was like having him on.
Weird. Like, why is this guy on our show? You know, like, I didn't understand it. I wasn't back then a big news junkie. So I knew that he was accused of, you know, planting the bombs and thing. And then I think he was exonerated, but was he exonerated? You know, it was never really, you know, proven or disproven. I don't know. I didn't know a lot about it. I just thought it was really a weird choice to have him in a couple sketches, and I didn't understand it. So I think it was more perplexed than anything. And I think he felt the same. I think he felt the same. Like, what am I doing? But I guess if they asked him to be on Saturday Night Live, you go on Saturday Night Live, you know? I mean, for sure, you know, coming from his thing. Yeah, I've seen them. I watched the Clint Eastwood movie a few years ago, and I have a better understanding now. And I wish I had known a little bit more about the case that he, you know, that he really didn't do it before I had had him work with him. But it was just really a strange, just to have him there. You know, I think everybody felt the same kind of way. It was like kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know? It was, again, probably a Lord choice to have him on, I guess, but I don't know. I thought it was weird.
Yeah. Interesting. Stormy Daniels?
kind of fun just being like, oh, Trump's going to hate this. That was, you know, like she was in a dressing room right near our cue card area, and I didn't know she was going to be on until I walked past the dressing room and I saw Stormy Daniels on the name on the dressing room door, and I was like, wait, what? And I went in, and there was a Stormy Daniels, welcome Stormy Daniels and flowers, and I took a picture next to it because I'm like going, oh, this is gonna be fun. Trump hates what we're doing on the show about him now. Oh boy, is he really gonna hate having her on the show? That was just fun knowing that Trump was gonna be upset about it.
Moving forward, I seem to recall an anthrax incident at NBC way back in 2001. People tend to forget the anthrax scare sweeping the nation at the time. Can you tell listeners about that?
I mean, it was right around 9/11 and stuff like that. It was all this stuff was happening. I there was anthrax sent to NBC News in our building, and they put it out there. Now I heard about this, like, as I was walking to from my car to the building, and I had to make a conscious choice, like, okay, there's anthrax. They found anthrax in our building. Could it be somewhere else? I had to make a conscious choice. Am I going to work today? You know, I wasn't going to call my wife and tell her what was going on, but I had to make a conscious choice to go into work. I'm like, okay, that's my job. If they don't feel it safe, they'll tell us not to come in or they'll send us home. So I went to work, and I think Drew Barrymore was hosting that show. And I think she left. I think she heard and she left the building. Mm. And then they got her to come back on Friday, I think. But I just remember it being like a scary thing because, you know, we're in this building, and a lot of people know this. There's no windows on our floor, on the 8th floor where the studio is. No windows at all. You can't see outside. You're shut off from everything. If there was a Holocaust going on outside, if the building was being attacked, we wouldn't know about it because you can't see, you don't see anything, you know. Wow. Especially back then, there was no, you know, not internet wasn't huge, and you're not, you know, and you don't see anything. So you're in this building. So once you're there, you try to close off everything that's going on outside the building. But when it's happening inside the building, it's hard to close off those thoughts about, oh, am I safe here? You know, what can happen? You know, and it's the building is a really big building. So after the planes hit, you know, those other buildings, you know, I'm walking into work and I'm looking up on my building. I'm like going, we're a major target. This is a major, major target that I'm going into. We're doing political comedy that's going against everything these people, you know, everything they hate, we're doing. And how are we not being attacked? You know, how is this a building that they have not targeted? And maybe they had and we just don't know about it. But yeah, it was a conscious and a really scary thought to walk into that building every day that year and a year after. So to do your job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the show obviously had a massive shift in its presentation when COVID hit. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. Talk a little bit about some of the impossible restrictions that were placed on the show at the time.
Well, let me just say no more cast parties. No cast parties. Cast parties are where you go to wind down and to commiserate and to have a drink and laugh, cry if your sketch get cut or didn't do well, you know. So and where I would get like my hug and a kiss from that famous actress that hosted, who would be so thankful that the show's over and that they get through it. And I'm a big part of that. I would get so many kisses from famous celebrities and famous women and men, mostly women. And I didn't get that anymore. I had no closure with these people. I couldn't say, get a hug. It was awful. It was terrible. So now you feel bad for me. Yeah. We had a meeting. Ken Amon called a meeting of all the department heads in August before the season started, before we could come back. And he, first thing he said to us, he was just like, we're coming back in October. We have COVID restrictions that we have to follow very closely. He was like, there is no way we can do this show with the COVID restrictions they're giving us. There's no way.
Hmm.
He's like, but I expect you guys and me to figure out how we're going to do it. Starting now, basically. Wow. Kind of. So it was wild. It was wild. So he basically told us the COVID restrictions. And then we started brainstorming and started throwing on ideas and throwing out where people could be and how many people could be in the studio and where can our staff be. Like, so we started out, I usually have 10 guys working for me on Saturday and I was only allowed 3 people in my cue card area. So I was like, okay, that's not going to work. I can't do the show with 3 people. So they found us an area for the first show on the second floor. No, sorry, the third floor. We were in a studio. They built a cue card area there. And all my guys were on the third floor. And the plan was do all the cards down there and then bring them up to 8. And me and the 2 other guys would hold them. But they'd be running cards up and down or elevators. And if an elevator breaks during a live show, we're screwed. So they were like, maybe you should be running them up. But it didn't last for very long. We were on the third floor for 1 week. And I was like, we can't do it like this. And they saw my guys running. And that doesn't work. So they found us a place on the 7th floor, which is just below where the 8th floor. So all my guys were in a studio down there. But again, I'm separated from them. So I'm not seeing anything. And I can't go back and forth because I'm up rehearsing. And we're wearing a mask. And we're wearing a face shield over the mask.
Wow.
Because I'm in contact. It was impossible. It was impossible. And I wear glasses. I couldn't wear my glasses. So for the last 2 years, those 2 years, I was doing the show blind almost because my glasses would fog up. But if I had contacts in, I couldn't read script to do changes, but I couldn't do both. So I did the show when I couldn't see, wearing a mask, wearing a face shield, and I licked my finger. I don't know if you know, I'm famous for licking my finger to get the parts because I'm stuck together. I couldn't lick my finger anymore. So I had to come up with wearing a sponge on my face shield. I had the prop guy glue a sponge on my face shield and I could lick. But it was wild. And that was only us. You know, there was every department had restrictions. Everybody had restrictions. But you know what? We pulled it off and it was like, you know, Lauren, like what said to us, say to us every week, he's like, what you guys are doing, the country really needs this show. Mm-hmm. And what you guys are doing is impossible, I know, but so thankful and so appreciative. And I think I probably felt, I think one of your pre-questions I saw, what was the biggest, you know, the best moment of your career? I think pulling those shows off during COVID under those conditions, I don't think I've ever been prouder of myself or my team for coming together and for the whole show coming together and doing a show, because Lauren really, really showed his appreciation and basically say the whole country is appreciating what you guys are suffering through doing this to do this show. And they appreciate it. And I appreciate it. And it made me feel really good that you could do that stuff. Wow. I go home for every show. I grab a sandwich and I go home and I sit and I watch a movie and drink beer and at 4 or 5 in the morning going, wow, where's my kiss from the, maybe one day I'll get those again.
That's an incredible story, man. The sponge on the face mask just.
Yeah. And I became famous for it, you know.
It's incredible. Well, I tell you, we gave time for Donald Trump, so I think it's only fair to ask you what it was like having Hillary Clinton on the show.
Oh, Hillary was great. Hillary was amazing. And she was in a couple of sketches with Amy, I think. And she was just so nice. And she brought some friends of hers from Connecticut. So it was like, it was just like hanging out with these older women from Connecticut that are just super nice. And I was running cards with her a lot. And she was very, very grateful. And she came off looking really good, I thought. You know, she did well. She's a really good performer. And she sent me a handwritten thank you note in the mail a couple weeks later than I had. And I was like, oh my God, I just got a handwritten thank you note from the next president, the first woman president of the United States. And I was so excited. And it was such a nice thing. And then she didn't win.
Alas, right?
Alas. But I still got a nice thank you note from her. And it was just really, really cool. It was a really cool experience meeting her. I always wanted Bill to host. That was my dream to meet him. One of my dreams to meet him, you know, because I thought he'd be really fun. I heard he's very charismatic and very,
very charismatic. I suspect he'd be very good at it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he'd be great. I don't know why. I don't know why that never happened.
Yeah.
You'll have to ask Lord about that.
Hey, if I ever get him on this podcast, that'll be my first question. I love to know what the experience is like meeting new cast members and then seeing them go on to these incredible careers. You know, I interviewed Hugh Fink, an SNL writer. Yep. Who, you know, wrote the last sketch for Chris Farley, wrote for Chris Rock and a whole bunch of other people. So people like Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, what's it like seeing them grow into superstars?
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is. Like, you know, so my first year was Chris Farley and Adam Sandler's first year. So we were all around the same age, starting new jobs. You know, theirs a little bit, you know, more profile than mine, but they were very nice to me. And because, like I said, we were the same age and we would hang out. We'd go to cast parties together once in a while, take a limo up. And Chris Farley was probably in my 32 years, probably the most naturally funny guy that I've ever seen in that show. And this is before cell phones. So, When you're blocking on Friday, long sketches, and it's an hour and a half sometimes, and you're sitting waiting for the director to figure out the shots, you're just sitting there doing nothing. Even if Chris wasn't in the show, in that sketch, he couldn't sit in his dressing room. He was too much energy to just sit in his dressing room waiting for his sketch to come up. So he'd be on the floor making everybody laugh, performing for everybody. And it was just fantastic. And just to see him, he would have his first season, maybe one line in a sketch, one line, maybe it's like six words. If he would put everything into those six words and friggin' kill, get a huge laugh, go off, and that's what you remember. You would remember Adam Sandler, who had 20 lines in it. You remember Chris Farley's one line because he put so much into it, got a huge laugh, and then left. And it always struck me as like, wow, that's friggin' talent to be able to do. And I've seen that, and then, you know, you see him go on and do the thing, you know, Tommy Boy and all the other stuff. I've seen that coming up through the years as well. Bobby Moynihan was the same way. Bobby Moynihan, his first year, and I told him that, and he was very thankful. He's like, thanks for telling me that. He's like, I don't think I can compare to Chris Farley. I go, no, it's exactly the same way, Bobby. You'll have one line. You'll come in. You'll give it everything you've got, kill, and then leave. And that's what people remember. It was the same thing with Farley, just naturally funny like that. But yeah, seeing these guys like Will Ferrell start, you know, get off the shed. Get off the shit. You know, these little.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh, that from sketch.
Yep.
And then progress to, you know, these movies he's doing and his serious roles. And like, he's the super nicest guy. And I privately cheer for him. And it's just always funny. Never not funny, you know? And it's just kind of a really cool thing to see. Mike Myers was another guy. Mike Myers was a guy that wrote all of his stuff. So to see him, he really made his way, you know. I remember him telling me that his dad sold encyclopedias. So he read every encyclopedia from front, from cover to back cover. And that's why you see a lot of his sketches are really smart. You know, the coffee talk.
Yeah.
You know, always give you a topic. Like, he always really smart. There's always a lot of facts in his sketches. And yeah, just again, see him start like that and then go to these huge movies. But I knew he was orchestrating all that. He was writing it. He writes everything he does.
Yeah.
So he kind of made his own way that way, you know?
Yeah.
It's just cool. And being able to call these people friends still when they come back and, you know, we chat, they give me a hug and, you know, we catch up and stuff. And I get to reconnect with Adam Sandler when he came back and hosted that I've been trying to get him. Every time I saw him for years, I'm like, when are you going to come back and host? When are you going to come back and host? He never would. And then he finally agreed to it. It was just, and I think he kicked himself because he had so much fun doing it. And then we reconnected and I have his number. We text every now and again.
That's great.
It's just fantastic. It's been a really cool thing in my life.
I chomped at the bit to ask you, what was running through your mind, if anything, when Adam Sandler hosted and sang that Chris Farley tribute song?
So everyone was crying. There were a lot of people crying. Cast members and crew members. I was the only one holding cards for that. So I had to keep my composure while he held that, while he sang that. Because if I lost it and I started, then the card started shaking or something like that. Or if he saw me crying, you know, I didn't want to throw him off and all. So I had to hold my composure. I think where I did start tearing up was at Good Nights when he got a standing ovation from the crowd, which you don't see very often at all. That's when I kind of lost it. Like, oh, it's, you know, and it was like, I knew he would do so great coming back. And I don't know why he didn't come back. And now he is back and he killed. He sang the Farley song. And then the audience gave a standing ovation. I was very emotional and it made me tear up and stuff. So it was wild. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I saw his performance when he did it for his Netflix special. And I was a sobbing mess.
Yeah. Oh, very emotional.
Moving forward a little bit, Wally, I'm really excited about this part. I've been sort of teeing this up in my mind since we started. So I want to talk about cue cards by Wally. Now, you very kindly agreed to actually make me a cue card here. And I guess, however, we tee this up. What is cue cards by Wally and what have you got for me? I guess is
well, again, pandemic related business. I was out of work. I wasn't allowed to do cue cards because I couldn't go to the building. And I had this idea a year before. My wife is in business and she's an entrepreneur. She loves us. She helped me start my cue card, my New York City cue cards, which I do in my main company. And we're celebrating our 20th year next year. And she helped her brother start her company and her dad helped start a company. She just loves doing that stuff. So I had said to her a year before, I have this idea when I want to do personalized cue cards for people. And she thought about it for a second and she was like, nah, I don't think it's a good idea or it's not the time to do it. And I was like, all right. You know, I really don't want to do extra work for myself anyway. I was just throwing it out there. And then a year later, pandemic, and I've been 3 months on the couch sitting next to her. She's working from home, working. I'm just watching TV and getting fat. And I said, she's turned to me and she was like, I think I get the itch to start a new company. I was like, all right, how about cue cards by Wally, my personalized cue card company? And a light bulb went off her head and she was like, yes, now is the time to do it. People can't go to weddings and people can't go to birthday parties and they need a cool gift to give to people. So she was like, yes, now is the time to do it. So we put together, and I was like, but I don't want to do a lot of work. I want this to be easy. I don't want to have to do a big business plan. She was like, all right, we'll do this minimal viable project. And I was like, okay, what's that? And she was like, we're going to open up an Instagram account for you and we're going to open up a Venmo account for you. And that's it. And I was like, that sounds perfect. So I just started doing cue cards for people, like people to give gifts to their friends that are fans of SNL or Seth Meyers. And it can't be anything comprehensive. It's been on the show, but it could be like, you know, live from West Bridgewater. It's Wally Fires, the head of cue cards for Saturday Night Live, you know. And people kind of heard about it and people started flipping out. And I got a lot of orders and it kept me busy. And it was one of those things where I was just trying to keep myself busy, but it turned out that people were flipping out and people were so happy at giving this gift and receiving this gift that I ended up bringing a lot of joy to people during this horrible pandemic time where people were stuck in the house. And I wasn't planning on that. I was just trying to make a little bit of money and keep myself busy. And I really ended up helping a lot of people. It really made me feel really good about myself. And yeah, it was again, like I said, it turned into a little bit of a phenomenon, you know, but yeah, I have your cards here. Now, I printed up a card before I saw the card that you want. So I took pictures of myself with these cards anyway. So if you want to take a picture while we're doing this, that's fine. But so here's the first one I wrote. You're going to send you these both. Live from the world of podcasting, it's Joshua Cohen presenting Eyewitness History. That could be something that you put somewhere in your wall. And here's what's highlight. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, thank you, Wally. The reason, in case you're curious, I wanted that line was because that is the last line of my intro. And I just thought it was perfect. I'll take a screenshot of this video here. So I have that because my plan is I'm going to frame that and that's going to haunt a bedroom wall. So
great. Well, I'm going to send you both of them and you do with them what you want.
You're very kind, Wally. Thank you so much. No problem.
No problem. Yeah. And if people see your card, like it, they can go to cuecardsbywally.com and, you know, can't do anything copyrighted, but I'd be willing to work with you and give you a card. I just did a video and I do videos for people. So I'll record myself writing the card and then I'll ask for information on who the card's for. And I'll do like a 3-minute video and talking and maybe being funny and then telling stories about if they have a favorite cast member or stuff. And it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. And I'll put all pertinent links in our show notes here, Wally.
All right.
Wonderful, man. I was wondering, Wally, if you could talk about some of the other shows that you've done cue card work for. You've done for Seth Meyers and I think Conan as well, correct?
Yeah, my company does Conan. I would work on that show as well. We did it when it was late night with Conan O'Brien. And then when he was out on the West Coast, we did it. Yeah, but we do cue cards for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. And so my main three shows are Saturday Night Live, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and Late Night with Seth Meyers. Those are my main shows. And then I'll do other stuff like the Miley Cyrus New Year's Eve show because Lauren produced it about Miami this year and last year. And just little gigs. I used to do a lot more little things when the company first started. But now, you know, my 32nd, 33rd year, I don't have that drive I've got anymore. So if I can't find somebody, one of my guys that wants to work extra, then I just usually probably will say, yeah, I don't have the manpower to do it. But the working on Late Night with Seth Meyers is probably the most fun besides SNL that I have working doing cue cards.
Yeah. How is he as a person? He seems like a super nice guy.
The best. I wouldn't be working there if he wasn't the best. I had a pretty cushy life. I was working 3 days a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 21 weeks out of the year. And the summer's off and it was pretty cushy. It was nice. I golfed a lot. I took it easy. I hung out, you know, my boys were young, so I would watch after them and I'd hang out with them in the summer. But when I saw he was getting a show, I was so close with him and wanted him to not worry about cue cards. Like I didn't want him to go in and thinking, oh, I had to, you know, learn how to read cue cards from somebody else holding cards. And I used to hold for him almost all the time when he was on Weekend Update.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said to them, if you're going to use cue cards, I'll run the show and hold it for Seth? And they're like, you will? And I was like, yeah, sure. And they were thrilled. So that's how it came to be. And I just, like I said, I didn't want him to worry about cards. I wanted him to be focused on the writing and the performing and all that other stuff. And it's just been, he's the greatest. And he's a really good cue card reader. So he makes me look good by reading.
That's wonderful. I know you actually made an appearance on Seth Meyers. How did that come about?
I've been on a lot. Not just one appearance, John.
You were staging a coup, my friend. You were staging a coup. Exactly. They had that on good authority.
Yeah, no, you know, when the first show first started, they were trying to find their way. And, you know, the writers liked me and they trusted me to do well in sketches. So they'd write sketches about me, you know, dropping the cards or whatever it is. It was just a lot of fun. It was every once in a while. And then COVID hit and we started doing it without an audience. And it was really, there's no band. And it was Seth at the desk, me and a cameraman. And there was nobody else for Seth to play off of. You know, Shoemaker doesn't want to be on camera, which is good for me. So he'll talk to Shoemaker, but they can never cut to Shoemaker. So they started cutting to me, and either Seth thought of it or Sal Gentile, the head writer, thought they put me in one close look where they cut to me doing something. And they liked it so much that they started doing it more and more. And it just became a thing now. And now I'm disappointed if I'm not in a close look. Well, I'm not in today. I'm not on camera today, guys. Come on. What? Not going to give the audience what they want? Yeah. So it turned me into a little bit of a camera maniac, a maniacal, egotistical maniac. But it's so much fun, you know. And I used to act, and I was the lead in all the high school plays. I always wanted to be a writer. I really didn't want to be an actor. I liked it, but I think deep down, all writers want to be on camera. So just from being on camera so much, and you know, I'm just so much more relaxed. It's so much fun. That I don't, doesn't come across as being here. I think my early performances were not great, but I think my last year or two, you know, like I get people come up to me and recognizing me, which is crazy. The crazier thing is celebrities coming up to me and telling me that I'm really good on the show and I'm really funny on the show. Huh. On him telling me you're hilarious. Your stuff is so funny. Blows me away. Jesse Plemons stopped me and he was like, Wally? And I was like, yeah. He was like, man, he was like, I'm a fan of yours on this show. I was like, stop. It's just wild. It blows me. And then you think, okay, yeah, I guess celebrities watch TV too. I guess they watch shows too. But that really, yeah, it's just been so much fun. And when I hear people say that they like me on the show, it blows my mind.
That's hilarious. Yeah. And what was running through your mind when John Oliver said you were staging a coup on Seth?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that. That stuff was great. He was on recently and I went to his dressing room and I was like, I'm waiting for the invitation, John. And he was like, invitation for what? I was like, want to be on your show. I want to do a bit with you on your show. Wouldn't that be great? Just to Seth, because Seth watches. And I know you watch our show. So why don't we have me on the show doing a bit? And it'll blow Seth's mind. And he started laughing. And Shoemaker, Mike Shoemaker, he's like a producer, was in the room. And he's like, he's not kidding, John. He's not kidding. He pitches stuff like this all the time. I go, it'll be funny. Let me know. I'm ready for it. So I'm waiting to be on that. Yeah. But again, that stuff blows me away. You know, John loves seeing me on the chef. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wonderful. Do you ever get nervous if you know you're going to be on camera?
No, that's the thing. I mean, the only time I'm nervous is for Seth Meyers. It's a much easier schedule than SNL. I'm in at 2 and we're out at 5. So it's great. We taped the show from 4 to 5. So I'll come in at 2 and we get closer look. Around 2:15, 2:30. I won't know before I get that script, which I have to print with my other guys, if I'm in the show. So while I'm printing it, I have to look at my lines and try to learn my lines while I'm printing. So that's the only thing part that makes me nervous. Like I'm doing two things like, okay, I've got 5 lines today. How am I going to say them? I want to make sure I don't, because Seth trusts me to be funny, not to screw it up. Now that we have an audience, we really don't like to do retakes. So I really don't want to screw anything up. So the only nervous part is kind of learning my lines before I go on. But once I'm there, I can't be nervous because first of all, my main job is holding cards for Seth. So I'm holding cards for Seth thinking, okay, I've got lines coming up. Don't screw this up. but once the time comes to say them, no, I for some reason I get relaxed and I just have fun with it. And the audience loves it and Seth likes it. And no, it works. It works really well.
That's wonderful. And I, speaking for myself as a late night and a comedy fan, I'm a sucker for when staff gets used. You know, it's one of the reasons why I've always been such a fan of Conan, is he's infamous for involving a staff, right? Yep. No, that's great. Excuse me. Well, Wally, I know we're coming up on our time. I have just maybe two questions left, if that's okay. Sure. Awesome. Appreciate that, man. So are there any upcoming projects that you're excited about that you want to tell listeners about?
No, I talk about my book all the time. I'm not writing it yet. I may be writing down passages here and there. I can't really go full board on that until I stop working on the show and the show stops going on air. Knock on wood that will happen.
Right.
Because I can't write a tell-all book or a book about my experiences behind the scenes with all these celebrities and still be working with celebrities, because I'll lose a lot of trust, I think.
That's fair.
They will maybe feel like they can be, you know, open and honest. So not doing anything about that. I will be doing some commercial acting this summer and going forward. So you might see me pop up in a commercial or two locally or nationally. We'll see.
Cool.
I'm going to try to capitalize on this Wally the cue card persona I'm going to going. other than that, no, just, you know, going to be on Seth Meyers on camera and working hard on SNL and going to my beach house in the summer and rehabbing my shoulder like I do every summer.
Mm. Business as usual, in other words, right?
Business as usual.
Wally Ferriston, how can people find out about you, sir?
Go to cuecardsbywally.com if you want to order a cue card. Or you can go to my Twitter, QCardWally, at QCardWally, or my Instagram, QCardsbyWally.com, or Wally Ferriston on Instagram. Or just Google me. You Google, I was once told, a friend called me up, he's like, if you Google cue cards, your picture comes up. And I was like, that's pretty crazy. But you go Wally Ferriston, F-E-R-E-S-T-E-N. Yeah, there's a lot of articles written about me that are cool if you want to get more information about me. That's it, yeah.
Wonderful. Wally, this was such a pleasure, man. Thanks for taking the time for me. I'm really glad that you responded to my email.
Josh, to be on a history podcast, it's my first history podcast, hopefully not my last, but I'm honored. And to be thought that I've witnessed history that people would want to hear about brings me joy.
That's kind of you, man. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. I will let you go. Thank you for everything.
Okay, Josh. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to support Eyewitness History, the easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Podcast Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's History of the Papacy, James Early's Key Battles of American History, and Richard Lim's This American President, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.